Western Montana fire that started the day at 60 acres exploded into one that at last report is now 2,000 acres. Good evening. I'm Edward O'Brien.
I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson.
And the West Fork 2 and Schoolhouse fires are our top story this evening on Montana Evening Edition. The West Fork 2 fire moved north and jumped U.S. Highway 12 at about 2:45 this afternoon while flames appeared to surround two homes on the south side of the road. That fire moved from the top of a ridge to the bottom in less than 15 minutes, and in the following 15 minutes moved another 2 miles down the canyon toward the town of Lolo. Motorists were seen trying to put out spot fires in the Barrow pits when a passing sheriff's deputy yelled at them to leave. Listening to the evacuation procedures over the police scanner, rather amazing this afternoon, officers getting pushed around by the erratic flames. Meanwhile, the nearby schoolhouse fire has burned an estimated, at last report, 600 acres and led to evacuations in the Bear Creek area. So, U.S. Highway 12 west of Lolo was closed to all but firefighters and evacuees at this hour. Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mock is on the scene. And Sally, I'm assuming you are there at the intersection of 93 South and Highway 12?
I am, Ed, and just got back a while ago from being about a half mile away from the main fire. Went up there with a Forest Service information officer, state information officer, actually, and got a really good look at what is just an incredible plume of smoke, a very towering plume of smoke, and some active flame. And really, as you were just saying, it is now one big fire of about at least 2,000 acres. They can't get a good estimate on it at this point because of the smoke. And it's a fire that's really creating its own weather. It's spotting fires up to a mile and a half ahead of the main fire, which is why the fire is spreading the way it is and why it is of such concern. And I have here with me Cindy Super, who's the state fire prevention officer with DNRC. And Cindy, really, the fact that this fire grew so quickly really caught everybody by surprise. And this morning it was 60 acres, the West Fork 2 fire. And now here we have one big fire that's at least 2,000.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, things happened really quickly, even more quickly than we had expected. And we're expecting things to happen quickly. So, you know, I guess it's just kind of one of those things where you plan for the worst and you hope for the best. And then it really did go very quickly.
And Cindy, at this point, there's no way to really attack this fire from the air or from the ground, but firefighters are arriving constantly and they're being assigned to protect homes and structures in the path of this fire. The crews, we saw a bunch of them gathering and being briefed and then being sent down the highway to go and try to protect those homes.
Right. We're focusing right now always on firefighter safety and then structure protection and getting people out of the way and protecting homes, structures, animals, whatever they can find. Their crews in there, they're doing evaluating each structure and taking the steps that they can as quickly as they can to try and save structures. Haven't really gotten any details on how that's going, but they're definitely working really hard.
And, of course, people east of the fire that live along Highway 12, they're being notified to be ready in case the fire does keep moving in their direction. They need to make sure that they've got everything ready to go, and most of all themselves, but also pets and livestock and so on.
Yeah, and we always ask people to have an evacuation plan, whether there's a fire right knocking on your doorstep or not. And so, you know, we're asking the folks that are east of the fire to do that, and they've got a very visible prod that's helping them with that. But, you know, I would tell anybody that lives in an urban interface, you need to be thinking about what you would do if you were in this situation.
And of course, Highway 12 is closed to all but some residents, and probably will be closed all night, maybe part of tomorrow, who knows.
Yeah, we're really kind of working with the weather and in a lot of ways just depending on what happens with the weather. Weather was responsible for this fire taking off like it did. Like you said, it did start to create its own weather, and so so now we're just having to wait and see, wait for an opportunity when we can get crews back in there and get aircraft back in there, and in the meantime, doing what we can.
Cindy, thank you so much. It's been a long day. I think you said you've been up since 4:30 this morning, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And, Ed, there's no public meeting scheduled tonight. They just have been too busy to get that organized, but people can go online and go go to the Forest Service NC website to get information or to any media site, including ours, for updates.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do have an update on that. I'll just read the release we just got from the Lolo National Forest. The planned public meeting that was scheduled for tonight at Travelers Rest State Park has been canceled, as you can imagine, due to the ongoing emergency. Residents, though, can come to the Lolo Superstop for fire information until 9 tonight. So, Sally, with that out of the way, have you had a chance to speak with any residents, or has it been just so insane you haven't had that opportunity?
No, I have been speaking to some of the residents because many of them have been evacuated and they're ending up in Lolo. And talked to one man, Chuck Satterley, who has a place at the 22-mile mark up Highway 12. And this morning he saw the fire, the West Fork 2 fire, thought it was about 3 miles away from his place. Came into Lolo to get some supplies, went back, and the fire was in his pasture. Mm. And he and his wife had to evacuate as quickly as they could, grab their dogs and their cats, let the chickens go, he said, and has no idea the status of his house. He does have a sprinkler system that he hopes is doing its job, but obviously very concerned. And I talked to another gentleman who lives further east from the fire, very worried, has an autistic son that he's concerned, you know, obviously very, very scary situation for anyone. And so a lot of people just, you know, they can see what the fire is doing, see the growth and how rapid it is, and there's no way that you could live anywhere near this fire and not be worried about it.
Yeah, sure. Governor Bullock is holding a briefing at this very moment here in Missoula. We don't have anyone there. We're spread thin right now. What have you heard there?
Well, Ed, the governor is having a briefing as we speak, I think,
yes.
And he had planned to do a flyover, but I think the fire's erratic behavior is going to prevent that. They don't think that he is going to be able to do that. If he does, we'll go with him and find out what he finds out about the fire, but I would say at this point that's not going to happen. This is a fire that is doing its own thing right now, and I don't think anyone can get close to it either from the air or from the ground.
Yeah, I do know that the governor has declared an emergency that enables him to mobilize state resources and the Montana National Guard. We have no word yet if those resources have been enabled, and not just for this particular incident, but for potential and other incidents around West Central and southwestern Montana as well. Sally, we've talked a little bit about this already, but expectations going into this evening, what's going to happen?
Well, they're going to obviously continue to try to protect the homes that are in the path of this fire as best they can, and then hope that overnight, obviously the red flag warning, I think, goes to about 9 o'clock tonight, and then usually the winds die down, and that will hopefully give them a little bit of breathing room in this fire, and then they'll get up early tomorrow and see what they've got to work with and hope that tomorrow is not a repeat of today weather-wise, but I think that's probably the forecast. And, of course, they're also concerned this is the biggest thing going right now, but there are other fires in the area that are small that could take off, new fires that could break out. We're just kind of in the middle of it right now.
Where are residents staying? Is there a Red Cross shelter, anything right now?
Haven't heard about that yet. I'm not sure enough people have been evacuated for them to start a shelter yet, but I'm not absolutely sure about that, Ed. We will keep on try to find that out and let people know.
Okay, and I do have this last note, and that is I've heard Missoula Animal Control is open right now with animal control officers on the scene. All I heard on the scanner was on scene, and that I'm assuming that would have to be the Lolo Superstop at 93 South and Highway 12 at that intersection. So that's perhaps some important information for people to know. That's
right. And
yeah.
One other quick thing, Ed, if you don't have to go south on 93 tonight, please don't, because there is a lot of traffic that is moving very, very slowly. And obviously do not go up Highway 12 unless you have to for any reason, and you won't be allowed to anyway unless you're a resident up there. So people really should, much as people want it or curious about these events, it really does help if people stay away and just try to track it through the media.
Oh, absolutely. The last thing these firefighters and law enforcement officers need are people rubbernecking, gawking at this fire. Okay, that's all we do have for right now. Sally, thank you very much. As always, stay safe this evening. Sarah has more on the overall fire danger.
As firefighting efforts continue across western Montana, interagency wildland fire officials and the Missoula County Fire Protection Association have bumped Missoula County's fire danger back up to extreme. MCFPA's Chris Johnson notes this is not the first time the region's fire danger has been this high this summer.
We've reached those same energy release components, you know, our measures of how intensely fires are going to burn. We've reached the same level that we were at here about 20 days ago when West Mullen was taking off in Superior. The recent rains that we had really set fire season back about 2 weeks, but now we're right back in the thick of things.
Johnson says the public won't notice many obvious changes with this move from very high to extreme fire danger.
We were in very high when these columns went off, and now we're in extreme. Basically, what it tells folks is that the next fire that starts is going to get hotter. It's going to spread faster than it would just a few days ago. So when we get these lightning busts that come through, if they don't have any rain associated with them, the fires that we normally catch, we may not catch immediately. It may take several days. So for the public, they should just be that much more on alert that the things that they do can really get away from them.
But apparently some people still are not taking the wildfire risk seriously.
We meet each Monday morning, a group of us. It includes people from the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes who are having a very difficult time with human-caused fires, predominantly unattended campfires. I was also speaking with Missoula Rural Fire Department, and unbelievably, they responded to a fire last week of someone who is still burning debris piles. We rely on the public during times like these to do their part. If our firefighters are charged with heading up the mountain at 1 a.m. to fight 50 lightning strikes, the public has to know that they're busy, they're taxed, and they can't be looking over their shoulder to the valley bottom or to a campsite somewhere. We've got to have the public support.
Johnson says penalties for starting fires, intentionally or not, can be stiff,
depending on the circumstance. But certainly people can be responsible criminally and certainly financially. And these fires now carry big bills.
The National Weather Service's Missoula office doesn't have very encouraging news for those waiting for Mother Nature to provide some relief from the ongoing fire danger. A red flag warning is in effect for most of west central and southwest Montana through 9 this evening. Meteorologist Corby Dickerson says the extended forecast isn't calling for any cooler or wetter conditions.
Unfortunately, we're going to remain with highs in the 80s and 90s pretty much through the rest of the week into next weekend. It does look like a chance of thunderstorms is going to return to the forecast as we move into late Wednesday and especially on Thursday, which comes with a mixed blessing. There should be some rain with these thunderstorms, but unfortunately this time of year, the amount of lightning usually exceeds the amount of rainfall we get. So these next couple days of hot and dry and windy, breezy conditions could be followed by a couple days of lightning and perhaps some rain. We're hopeful for some rain, but right now we're a little bit concerned that there could be more lightning coming.
Dickerson says it's too soon to know which areas may next get some rain.
I would hedge my bets towards central Idaho, southwest Montana, more towards south of Missoula. These types of convective situations tend to favor areas, you know, and cross the Idaho-Montana border. But unfortunately, this time of year, those convective storms tend to be on the drier side of things, especially with the direction they're coming from, which appears to be southwest, coming out of Oregon and central Idaho. So we'll see some thunderstorms. Chances are we won't see much in the way of rainfall.
More on weather later in this broadcast.
And this just in, evacuation centers for residents affected by the West Fork 2 fire are at Lolo School. And in other news from around the state, residents in a three-block area of northern Missoula were evacuated after a landlord found bomb-making chemicals in a tenant's apartment. Four plexes in a mobile home park were evacuated this morning so police could clear a 100-yard area around the apartment. Missoula police said the landlord entered the apartment this morning and found chemicals he believed could have been used to make methamphetamine. Responding officers instead found chemicals needed to make bombs. At midday, experts were in the apartment trying to analyze the compounds and determine best to remove the chemicals. Police said a 26-year-old man has been detained for questioning in Kalispell.
Yellowstone National Park officials are taking some precautionary measures, but not actively suppressing a fire burning near the Grand Loop Road of north of Yellowstone Lake. The Lum Fire has burned an estimated 4,000 acres in the Mud Volcano vicinity. It's an area that hasn't seen a wildfire in years, including the huge 1988 fires. The fire is well away from any large visitor areas, but firefighters are being brought in to do structure protection work in Fishing Bridge, Lake Village, and Bridge Bay as a precaution. The main concern now is smoke from fire possibly hampering visibility on the lower east section of Grand Loop Road. Several other fires are burning in remote areas of Yellowstone and pose no danger, although they are sending up a lot of smoke.
Two employees of a Missoula auto body shop were injured when a spark ignited fumes from lacquer thinner. Missoula Fire Marshal Gordy Hughes says the employees of Rick's Auto Body caught fire this morning when static electricity caused the fumes to ignite, resulting in an explosion. Hughes says one man was seriously injured and another had minor burns and injuries related to inhaling the fumes from the explosion. Both men were taken to St. Patrick Hospital. Their names were not released.
The U.S. Air Force says a B-1B bomber out of South Dakota's Ellsworth Air Force Base has crashed in a remote area of Montana, but the four crew members survived. Colonel Kevin Kennedy of the 28th Bombing Wing says the two pilots and two weapon systems officers ejected from the aircraft before the bomber crashed near Broaddus, Montana today. He said the crews survived, but there were some injuries. The crash remains under investigation.
The governor's office is announcing a new initiative aiming to increase the number of Montanans who finish their college degrees. Complete College Montana aligns with the national nonprofit Complete College America, which works with states to raise graduation rates. Governor Steve Bullock says the program fits with his goal to increase the number of Montanans with a higher education degree or certificate from 40% to 60%. He says it promotes a funding system for colleges based on results, better prepares students at the high school level, and makes the path to a degree less complicated for students.
It'll bring together under one initiative current state efforts and new strategies that show great promise for not only increasing college completion, but to ensure that students are earning their degree on time, saving students and the state of Montana millions of dollars.
32 other states and the District of Columbia currently take part in Complete College America. It's a nonprofit funded by groups like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Complete College America President Stan Jones says nationwide, only a third of students who enter a four-year school graduate in 4 years.
Right now, students are faced with overwhelming choices on how to work through a system that's very bewildering to them. And academic maps, clear choice of majors, can lead them to both more timely graduation and higher graduation rates.
Jones says other states have not had to increase spending to take part in Complete College America. The Montana Board of Regents hopes to put out a list of goals to improve graduation rates in the next few months.
The country has just a few more months before many of the major elements of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare go into effect. This includes a requirement for Americans to buy health insurance starting the first of the year. An online marketplace will be giving Montanans without insurance options to buy plans from one of three providers. In tonight's feature interview, Capitol reporter Dan Boyce speaks with Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance Monica Lindeen about choices people will have regarding the marketplace. Plan prices from the three providers that will be on the marketplace were released today. Lindeen says she was pleasantly surprised to see rumors of dramatic price increases under the Affordable Care Act not happening in Montana.
Instead, what we have are rates for these products that are being offered by private insurance companies in this new federal marketplace, which are competitive. In some cases, they're about the same as what they would have been had there not been the Affordable Care Act passed or Obamacare. And some are actually cheaper. So we're pleasantly surprised. And I think the reason why Montana isn't seeing this rate shock that some states might see is because of the fact that we had such great consumer protections already in place in Montana law. Things like all the different mandates that we have that in terms of different benefits that insurance companies have to cover, and also the fact that we already had in place a non-gender law which said that you can't rate policies based on gender.
But the idea here is that we have these three different insurance companies, mm-hmm. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, Pacific Source, and the new Montana Health Co-op. Mm-hmm. The idea being in this marketplace, they would compete with each other and people would be able to choose between their plans for the cheapest rate, considering that's supposed to be this transparent online system of doing this. Why wouldn't the prices be lower than they had been before?
Well, on average, they are lower. What I'm saying is that we're not seeing this huge increase that we were told would happen. And that's because there is this competitive marketplace that's occurring even inside of the federal marketplace.
So insurance plans must now cover what are known as 10 essential health areas. These include doctor's office visits, emergency medicine, mother-newborn care. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Plans on the website will be broken up into how they cover those areas?
No. All these plans that are being offered have to have at least the 10 essential health benefits included, and this is what I'm talking about. Montanans in our law already required almost all of these anyway, so that's a good thing. So it didn't increase the cost by having these essential health benefits. In terms of the different types of plans, the types of plans have more to do with what you're going to pay out of pocket, okay? So, for instance, we have what are these different metal levels inside of the marketplace. You have a platinum, gold, silver, and bronze, and that indicates how much you would pay out of pocket. So the bronze, you would be paying more out of pocket versus the platinum, where you would pay less, if that makes sense at all. And the other thing I want to point out is that the rates that were released today do not include any of the potential tax credits or cost-sharing subsidies that somebody might receive depending on their income level.
What you're saying here, for low-income Montanans, there are more options to bring the prices they see down. Mm-hmm. How can these people do so?
Well, on October 1st, when it will become available for them to go ahead and begin purchasing, they'll be able to input their personal information, their income, and then they'll be able to find out how much they're eligible for in terms of tax credits and also subsidies.
How potentially significant could those be?
Oh, really significant. I mean, when you think that, when you realize that, well, everyone is eligible to purchase in the new health marketplace, what we're really trying to target more than anything else are those who have been uninsured. And really, most folks who are uninsured because they can't afford it. And so the lower your income, the more likely you are that you're going to be able to take advantage of these tax credits and the cost-sharing subsidies. I mean, you could have people who, you know, where the rate may be something like, I don't know, $200, let's say, for an individual, they may be able to see a significant decrease in that rate because of the tax credits that are available.
This law has been so demonized by so many people for a long time now, several years. Is that keeping people from learning what they need to know and doing and taking the types of steps they need to take?
That's a really good question. I think that obviously there's been so much information out there ever since the law was passed that it's been difficult for people to educate themselves because we're all getting very mixed messages. And yes, there's been, at least in some cases, a lot of misinformation that's directing fear. And so, yes, people would hesitate in terms of trying to actually educate themselves about the facts, potentially. But that's what our office is for. We're here to help get the facts out there. We have a website that's available. It's called MontanaHealthAnswers.com. And people can actually log on, you know, input their question and send it to us, and a live person in our office will actually respond to your question within 5 business days.
So then let's go ahead and let's reiterate just the basic notion behind the marketplace and how that fits mm-hmm. into the Affordable Care Act. Let's talk about what exactly people do have to do, if there's any way to help alleviate any anxiety or fear about that.
Well, I think the notion of the marketplace is making sure that we get everyone insured. And as you know, come January 1 of 2014, there's this mandate out of the new law that says that everyone should purchase health insurance. And so what this does is create a marketplace where it's more affordable to purchase health insurance.
Starting January 1st, people have to be insured. So those without insurance, they need to be looking into their options. They need to be doing things mm-hmm. like going to the website your office is set up.
Well, what I would do is start talking with insurance agents right now, and I would also contact our office through our website to get more information. There's a healthcare.gov website you can get more information from. And remember that, you know, there are some folks who will not be mandated to actually purchase insurance. For instance, I'll just give you an example. There are some exceptions to the rule here. If you don't make enough money to even file an income tax return, you certainly are exempt then from that mandate. I mean, literally, if you can't afford to make enough money to even file a tax return, they're not going to make you purchase insurance. So there are a couple of different exemptions out there, and we can answer those questions for you through our website as well.
Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, Monica Lynn Dean, speaking about rates for the plans on the health insurance marketplace that will be up and running in the beginning of October. October plans will start being effective beginning of the year. Miss, thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You can find a link to more information about Montana's health insurance marketplace by clicking on the story on our website. That's mtpr.org.
In tonight's weather forecast, smoke from the expanding schoolhouse fire in the West Fork 2 fire near Highway 12 is impacting Lolo and the Missoula Valley. Visual observations indicate air quality is unhealthy for sensitive groups to unhealthy in the Lolo and South and East Missoula Valley locations. Across all three of our listening areas tonight, expect clear skies with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies with highs in the upper 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Julia Altimus.
The federal government manages more than 50% of the land west of the Mississippi. Interestingly, less than 5% of the land east of the Mississippi is under federal control. As Western territories joined the Union in the 1800s, the federal government made a promise to dispose of the public lands it acquired when each territory became a state. As the 1828 U.S. House Committee reported, those terms were part of an implicit contract between the states and the federal government. When states agreed not to tax the lands within their borders until they were sold, they were resting upon the implied intent of Congress that lands would be sold within a reasonable period of time. However, the federal government could not sell lands they did not have clear title to. This fact led to virtually all Western enabling acts to have a disclaimer clause that states, "The people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within said territory, and that the same shall be and remain at the sole and entire disposition of the United States." As new territories joined the Union, every single one had to agree to disclaim title to all of the public lands within their territorial boundaries. The federal government's response was that until the U.S. title could be extinguished, the states could not maintain or even tax those lands. The federal government promised to dispose of the lands so individual states could bring them into their tax base, recognizing that taxing the soil is a power incident to all sovereign states. President Andrew Jackson made a statement in a veto message to Congress, emphasizing the Enabling Act, and wrote, "It cannot be supposed the compacts intended that the United States should retain forever a title to lands within the states. Subsequently, Congress never required the disclaimer. Terms in the Enabling Act were simply to provide clear title so lands could be sold. The question of whether the federal government has seriously breached the law in virtually all Western states is under consideration by many legal scholars and resource management activists. They assert that the original and long-standing policies of the federal government were dedicated to the disposition, not retention, of federal lands. It was only in the 20th century that legislative and regulatory movements shifted towards federal retention of public lands. At the time of statehood, all Western states recognized that until disposition occurred, the states would be in financial jeopardy. It was a revenue problem then, and it is a revenue problem now. The General Accountability Office released a report that foretells of an ever-worsening fiscal outlook for state and local governments through the year 2060, with increasing gaps between receipts and expenditures. Were Congress to honor compacts under today's current federal deficit, the financial results could be catastrophic. In addition, in this day and age, few would likely support the federal government selling off public lands and putting them into private ownership, where all government control would be lost. The fact remains, with federal sequestration here to stay, requiring an 8-10% annual reduction in program and budget over the next several years, all federal land management agencies will be required to do more with less, with the majority of the impact felt in the West. The idea that the federal government should dispose of all public lands within state borders is a pretty radical idea. In light of the current and projected challenges facing public land management agencies, bold and drastic measures may be our only recourse. In the meantime, it certainly makes for interesting discussion. On behalf of the Montana Wood Products Association, I am Julia Altimus. Thanks for listening.
Julia Altimus is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.